You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
On va saluer la Britannique Lizzie Degnan, la championne des États-Unis Megan Guarnier. On va saluer la Hollandaise Yip Van Den Bos, la Canadienne Caroline Canuel, la championne olympique, la championne d'Europe et double lauréate de la Flèche Wallonne. Vos applaudissements pour la Hollandaise Anna Van Der Breren. Équipe Bulls Dolmans, qui est en
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinoui.
Hello.
And we're in a more exotic setting this month, aren't we, Orla?
Well, I'm not sure exotic is the word I'd use to describe
well, we're both
the
wearing
current
sunglasses.
Media pen. We are in sunglasses and thermals.
It's beautiful sunshine. We're in the Ardennes. We're clinging to the side of the Mur de Huy. We're about halfway down it at the moment, 500 metres to the summit. Well, not quite halfway, but... steep old climb, isn't it? We've just seen the women's race get underway and then we've wandered down the hill. We spoke to a few of the riders at the start this morning. We're going to be sort of podcasting as live today as the race unfolds. We're waiting for them to come through here a first time in about 20, 30 minutes or so. First of two times up the Mur de Huy. There's a breakaway at the moment. And we've got a few interviews for you. We've got an interview in the final part with a track rider, track sprinter, Victoria Williamson. The track world championships have just been held, of course, in Hong Kong. We'll talk a bit about them in the final part. Victoria Williamson wasn't riding. She's on the comeback trail, having suffered a horrific injury just over a year ago. So I spoke to her in Manchester recently about her year out and how she's battling back. And she had some good news recently, so that's great. And a very gutsy woman and interesting interview. We'll also hear in part two from Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, the French rider who's joined Canyon-SRAM this year. Former World Road Race Champion, a winner here in 2014 at Flèche Wallonne. Don't think we've actually mentioned yet that we're at Flèche Wallonne, have we?
I don't think we have, actually.
I think we forgot that important,
we're at Flèche Wallonne.
That important detail. But we spoke to Pauline Ferrand-Prévot last night, didn't we, Orla, in the Canyon-SRAM Hotel?
Yeah, we did. As you say, former world champion, actually three-time former world champion. She's had a really tough year, actually, since the Rio Olympics. She dropped out of the road race and since then really fell out of love with cycling. She said it was her biggest love and it's turned into her biggest nightmare. So she's been really struggling to enjoy the sport again. She's had 6 months off the bike, coming back to it now. Really interesting to get an insight, I think, into the psyche of someone like that who's had such precocious success. She won those three world titles within a year, had a huge following in France. She had camera crews following her around before the Olympics. So she's one of their golden girls. And then to have that very public disappointment, I think was very hard for her, given that level of success. So yeah, quite a, I hesitate to say a darkness to the story, but she's certainly been to a dark place. And she says she's on her way back from that. She's been doing really well at mountain biking again and coming back to form on the road as well. I'm not quite sure from speaking to her whether she's really found her love of the sport again yet.
Yeah, well, she rode well at the weekend in the Amstel Gold Race. Mm. She was eighth there. That's her best performance on the road this year. You know, a lot of pressure on her, a lot of expectations. She's the leader of the Canyon-SRAM team, which is one of the bigger, better, and you know, more well-funded teams in the women's peloton. So a bit of pressure on her. As you say, she's got that profile in France as well. And, you know, she still seems to be sort of caught between her two things of mountain biking and road racing. And, you know, speaking to her, it seems that her heart maybe belongs in mountain biking. She will go back onto the mountain bike after this spell of racing. But we'll hear from her in part two. She's an interesting athlete and it's an interesting story. At the start this morning, Orla, you and I wandered around the team buses. I had a long old trek out to the Team Sunweb bus, which turned up quite late and parked what seemed like a long...
About 100 metres away,
it was
Richard.
Further than that. It was further than that.
Your creaking joints sort of...
I was walking for ages.
Aching down that road.
You drew the long straw by hanging around the Bulls Dolmans bus, I think. And yep. You spoke to Annemiek van Vleuten as well?
Yeah, I did. Vorica Scott. Spoke to her. She was getting her legs massaged this morning. She had that quite remarkable joint third place at Amstel Gold on Sunday. So I asked her about that and asked her about her form as well after the Olympics. So she seems in a fairly good place. I'm happy with how she's doing. Not necessarily going for a conventional win today. She might have to do it from a bit of a breakaway. She says the finish on the Murdoch might be a little bit difficult, but she's my outside bet for today.
Well, Anna van der Breggen is the defending champion, the big favourite. She won the Amstel Gold race with a really phenomenal performance, strong team performance as well. Annemiek van Vleuten has been outstanding this year. Mm-hmm. One of the real aggressive riders. She's lit up a lot of the races she's ridden, along with Elisa Longo-Borghini, has been the other in-form rider. We talked about her a bit last month. She's missing today, unfortunately. She's unwell. Giorgia Bronzini, her Wiggle High Five teammate, is riding, having just arrived back from the World Championships in Hong Kong. Quite surprised to see that she is riding. But as I mentioned, you spoke to a couple of people this morning, Annemiek van Vleuten and Megan Garnier. I also spoke to Corinne Rivera, who is leading the Women's World Tour. Obviously, she's won two of the events so far, including Tour of Flanders. Not perhaps optimistic like Annemiek van Vleuten of winning on top of the Mur de Huy, but I had a quick chat with her this morning. She'll be wearing the leader's jersey again today. Here she is, Corinne Rivera. Corinne, how do you reflect on the season so far? You must be absolutely delighted.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked. Yeah, I didn't come into the season expecting this entirely, yeah. Just learning and maximizing the opportunity, and it's been amazing to have the support and the opportunity to race here in Europe, well supported, especially as a North American. Everything's paying off, all the hard work, the team chemistry and everything. So it just shows in the way we ride and our results.
How did you feel on Sunday wearing the World Tour Leaders jersey? I mean, they often say the yellow jersey gives you wings. You seem to be digging very deep as well, and you must have been proud of your performance. But how did it feel to wear that?
Yeah, it's pretty special, and trying to represent the team and the jersey as best as I can, and just not giving up. So I think that's part of the name of the game here, and just doing the best that I can with the girls.
What about today? How do you look on today's race? One that might not suit you quite so well, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's quite a specialized race. When it finishes on the top of a hill, I think there's not a ton you can do tactically. Just kind of, it is what it is kind of race. But yeah, we'll do the best that we can, considering everything, and give it everything we can to get a good result today.
And what are you missing? Liège Bastogne Liège, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, would that change if you were still in the leader's jersey after today, or is that decided?
No, that's been decided from early on in the season that I would take a little bit of a break that weekend. So just sticking to the plan. There's a long-term idea behind it. So just going with the flow, going with the plan, and it's still a long season. So
what's the plan after Sunday? When will we see you racing again?
I do Yorkshire, and then I head home the next day, and then get ready for Tour California.
Great. Well, good luck today.
Thanks
very much. Yeah. So that was Corinne Rivera, 24-year-old Californian, who's having a great season with Team Sunweb, her first year with that team. We're just watching a dragon in a BMC top.
Richard, that is very definitely a crocodile.
I don't know why I said dragon. It's definitely a crocodile.
It's green, it's got two big jaws.
Yeah, it's definitely a crocodile.
It's a crocodile. In a BMC jersey, maybe that threw you.
Why did I say dragon?
I don't know.
Anyway, Australian flag.
He's waving back.
How do you know it's a he? Could be a she.
We
heard from Corinne Rivera there. You spoke we'd like to introduce who you spoke to this morning.
Yeah, so spoke to...
Hopefully you do a better job of remembering that than the hill that we're standing on. I saw you searching your brain for the name of it earlier.
It's been a long day already. And I am a little bit excited to be at the race, I have to admit. But I spoke to Annemiek van Vleuten, as we said, and also Megan Garnier, the... inaugural World Tour winner from last year. Hasn't had the best of seasons so far. She crashed back in February, quite a nasty crash, and she's been coming back from that. So I was asking her about her form at this stage of the season. So Annemiek van Vleuten and Megan Garnier. So how are you feeling then ahead of today?
Yeah, excited. I always love this race. It's not the race that suits me the best because the uphill finish. But it's lovely to race here. Epic and it's an old race, so yeah, it's one of the classics I'm excited for.
And how are you finding your form then? A great showing at Amstel Gold.
Yeah, I'm good. Maybe not in my Rio top shape, so I think I can build up still a bit later in the season, and that's actually also the plan. So yeah, here waiting for the Mura of Huy will be not how for me how to win this race, so I will have a different tactic.
And do you mind me asking a little bit about Amstel Gold as well, and a brilliant race, great to see it back in the women's calendar. Happy with your podium?
Yeah, super happy, because I think that was the best I could do that day, because there were some girls who were better than me on the Kouberg, had troubles and come back, and yeah, I was super happy, especially after I made a mistake in the sprint. I was confused with the old finish line, so I did go, I saw some white on the finish line, and then I go sit on my saddle, I thought I was there, and then I sprinted again, so it was a big mistake for me, and I was so disappointed when I felt like, shit, they outsprinted me for the third place. So I was even more happy that in the end it was the shared third place.
Yeah, because you'd sprinted for the line that wasn't the finish line. When did you realise what went through your head when you did realise that it wasn't the actual race finish line?
It was not so much my time to think and realise it. It just like, went, oh shit, it's not the finish line, and start to sprint again. And then felt Kasia and Iwinoma coming up on the right. So yeah, big mistake. But after finish, I was super disappointed and super mad about myself.
And then on reflection, maybe quite happy that you managed to keep the podium all the same.
Yeah, super happy. That's my first World Tour podium this year, so it's always nice to be on the podium.
And what's it like to have a full Ardennes week for the women here?
Crazy. Like, I love it. Like, and also I think what they did in Amstel Gold Race with Let Us Start Together with the guys, like 10 minutes behind after them, that was a super good move. And also that we finished a bit more early, so we have the TV coverage sort of last 45k. And then it's on to the men. So I think this kind of setup is really good for women's cycling.
So Megan Sinan, just about to close, getting ready for the race ahead. How do you feel?
Yeah, it's one of the special days today. So we have a strong team and I'm excited.
How's your form been? How are you feeling at the moment?
Yeah, I'm still coming around from my crash in Hageland, and it's been a slow recovery and a little bit frustrating on my end, but I'm glad to be back with the team.
How difficult is that to have that crash so early in the season as well? You mentioned frustration. I mean, that must be almost as hard as a physical recovery, I guess.
Oh, yeah, for sure it's a physical recovery. And then trying to get my fitness back and being back here with the team has been super helpful.
And the mood good in the team then?
Oh, of course. I think, yeah, you can see we're always smiling and having fun. So that's really important.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
Laura, we're on a cracking spot here, on a grassy knoll overlooking the climb, and we just saw the riders go through in the first time up the Mur de Huy. First of two climbs, just 29 kilometres to go in the race now. Ashley Mulman, who was on the ground earlier, she crashed, somehow managed to get from being on the ground to being off the front on her own. Not sure how she did that.
It sounds like it was quite a big crash, actually. Four riders taken to hospital. Most of the peloton managed to get straight back up, but Ashley Mulman-Passio wasn't one of them. She was checking out her bike, a bit slow to get back on, and now not only managed to bridge the gap to the breakaway, but out front on her own. The rest of the peloton, they were right on her back wheel.
Big bunch just behind her. She's my tip, of course. When we discussed this morning who might win, she was my tip. You will recall.
This is what I was thinking. Your curses must have floated on the crisp Belgian breeze back to Ashley. She realised that you weren't happy that she was your tip and she was on the ground. So what she got?
That was for me.
That was
Cheers,
for you.
Ashley. No, that was... It's such a great sort of amphitheatre, isn't it, almost here? As I say, we're on this grassy knoll overlooking the climb on one of the bends, just at 450 metres to go. Decent crowd starting to build. Most people are down at the bottom in one of the big tents where they're serving food and so on, or up at the top, but we came to the middle.
And a really good crowd here, actually. We're at one of the steepest corners of the Mur de Huy. And the fans have been here at least for the last hour anyway, not able to watch any of the race. So there's no screen for them to watch it, and just here waiting for the riders to go past. So it's a brilliant atmosphere, actually. It's really enjoyable.
Which is disappointing that we can't see the race at the moment on the screen. Who did you spot? I did spot Pauline Ferrand-Prévot moving up the outside of the bunch, quite near the front. Who else did you see there?
Spotted Lizzie Deignan looking very strong, actually, at the front of the bunch. Seemed to be coming up to the front, actually, so I'm not quite sure if she was or not. But out of the saddle, looking very strong and very focused. You never know with Lizzie, actually, on a day like today, if she can put the pressure on and have the team around her. Obviously, you've got to be looking at Anna van der Breggen, but Lizzie would be a nice little outside shout as well, wouldn't
Anna
she?
Anna van der Breggen always throws me that jersey that she's wearing, a European champion jersey. It's not one that we're used to seeing at all. Riders and cars still coming through here. I should say, at this stage, thank you very much to our sponsor, Science and Sport, who, along with Rafa, sponsor the cycling podcast, Femina. You can get 20% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com if you enter the code CPOD20, that's a new code, CPOD20, you will get 20% off, which is wonderful. I mentioned earlier, Orla, that we spoke to Pauline Ferrand-Prévot last night on the comeback trail, and let's hear from her now. This was in the Canyon SRAM Hotel in the remote forest of the Ardennes. It was very nice. You did a bit of yoga.
I did.
I had a swim.
Two lengths, Richard.
I did two lengths.
It was
a very long pool. No, swimming. That's not even swimming, is it? That's like...
With the length of you, that's barely a stroke to do a length.
I didn't really have to even do a stroke.
you just lay down in the water.
And altered direction. I maneuvered myself around like a tanker. Anyway, Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, we did speak to her later on, just before we had dinner. Here she is, Pauline Ferrand-Prévot.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with my performance in Amstel. I can see it's going better and better every weekend, so I'm quite happy with my shape now. For tomorrow, I think I can be good, but it will be hard to win, so... Yeah, you have to be smart, and I have also my teammates that can protect me, and yeah, we will see for tomorrow, but I feel good, and yeah, first, you have to ride with pleasure, and now I find back the pleasure, so everything is right. After the Olympic game, it was a hard time for me, and yeah, I didn't want to go on the bike anymore, because yeah, for me it was like a nightmare, and yeah, I didn't want to ride. So after 2 months of the bike, I decided to start training again and to try to have a pleasure on the bike. And finally, yeah, also because of the team, now it's came back, and I'm really happy and really motivated to train and to race also. So yeah, I didn't expect that, but yeah, now I can say that I'm happy, and yeah, for me it's the biggest victory already. I think now that everything that happened, it's not only bad, because yeah, when you lose, you also learn. So I think I learned a lot. But yeah, you know, I won like 3 world titles in one year. So for me, it was like I was dreaming. And when it's finished, you say, oh, yeah, maybe now it's hard, and cycling is very hard. And yeah, also because I think I had too much Olympic in my head. And for 4 years, I was only thinking about this. And when it's finished and you know that you can't win, you have to wait another 4 years, it's really hard mentally. So I was not motivated, but yeah, finally now I have new goals, and yeah, the biggest one was to come back and to take pleasure, and now I say that maybe I will find my best level again, so for me it's a good motivation. I will do a tour of California, and after I will go back on MTB, Yeah, for me it's really my motivation, and I could not go only on the road because I really miss MTB, and yeah, for me I really need to change bike, and for my head, especially this year, yeah, I really need to switch. So I will do MTB again, and yeah, we will see. Before it was only about Gianni Longo, and since I won the World Championship on the road, yeah, it's now they switch and it's more me. But yeah, it was also a big pressure before the Olympics because yeah, everybody say yeah, she will win gold and she has to win gold, and so for me, it was a pressure. And after the Olympics, of course, people was really disappointed, and yeah. For me, it was hard to hear things like this. But now, yeah, it's more like I don't care, and I do my own job, and yeah, I do what I like the most, cycling. So yeah, I think I have still a French public, but maybe less after the Olympics.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. Very grateful to them for their continued support. Later this week, doing an event at the Rafa Clubhouse Cafe in Manchester with Hannah Barnes, or as she was introduced today, Anna Barnes. Anna Barnes.
Anna Barnes.
It was very cool. I think she enjoyed that. Might introduce her like that on Thursday. But the race has just been done and won. Orla, we're standing just beyond the finishing line. The men's race is on now. And it was won for the third year in a row by Anna van der Breggen. Obviously, her second World Tour win in a row as well. And the second 1-2 for her team, Bols Dolmans, with Lizzie Deignan finishing second once again. Very dominant performance by those two. You spoke to Lizzie Deignan. That interview featured in our regular podcast last week. But the bridesmaid again, she seemed very happy at the finish once again for her teammate, but was maybe slightly annoyed or not?
No, not that I picked up on anyway. And I don't think
annoyed, but just thinking, I'll get, you know, it's got to be my chance at some point.
Maybe she is thinking that, but that certainly wasn't the feeling today. She was delighted with that 1-2. Said it went exactly according to plan. It wasn't necessarily the plan that it would be Anna number one and Lizzie number two. I think they both would have been just as happy the other way around. But Lizzie, I think, is happy as maybe as much as relieved that she's showing that she's up there again. That's her third podium this season, which is incredibly good for someone who has suffered an awful lot off the bike. She's been ill. She's had an awful lot going on since Rio last year. So to show that she can build on that and come back and still be up there at the very top, and you know, beaten only by her teammate. The other way of looking at that is that she's assisted her teammate to the win, and she's also gotten second. She's delighted. And she's spoken as well about how they felt a bit of pressure with what they would see now as premature writing off of Bols Dolmans as a dominant force. And, you know,
she obviously listened to the podcast last month.
I was going to say, because I'm guilty of that myself. And that's partly because you preempt it, because you think, well, it's going to happen at some stage. They can't stay on top for a second season in a row, but of course they can. And they have been hit by illness throughout the team, a bit of misfortune as well. And I mean, I spoke to Danny Stamm and asked him whether, even without that illness, whether they would have been planning to peak for this week. And yet he said that they would have done. So, I mean, these are their home races. You can see the orange of Bols everywhere. This is a home race for them. So incredibly important from a sponsor point of view to be able to win. So they've come good at exactly the right time. And I think Lizzie Deignan is just happy to be where she wants to be, that she's getting her form back again, mentally, physically. And, you know, she'll be building towards the British races. She'll be building towards the Worlds. And yeah, she's a happy woman today.
And Anna van der Breggen, we'll hear from her in a moment or two, but what a record she's got now. You know, winning this race 3 years in a row. She won the Amstel Gold Race at the weekend there. She's the Olympic champion. She's the European champion. It's a hell of a palmarès she's got. You mentioned you spoke to Danny Stam, who manages that team. Shall we hear from him and then from Anna van der Breggen?
Well, why not? Let's do it. So you must be feeling pretty happy with today's result.
Yeah. The last two races is extremely good, and it is both in the town of the sponsor. So yeah, we are really happy with these results.
How did today pan out in relation to the plan at the start of the day?
Well, exact how we planned. We wanted to have a small group to the final of the Muir, and we expected that we were with three. And yeah, that was actually how it ended up. And from that part, we play cat and mouse, and yeah, Anna went away, and she win with alone.
A lot of questions have been asked of the team at the start of the season. There have been illnesses, there have been bad luck, certainly compared to the dominance of last season. This must be a nice way to say, yeah, we're still up there.
Yeah, but to be honest, I never doubt on that part. I mean, I have a lot of trust in the girls, and yeah, I said just keep the confidence and keep doing what we have to do. And okay, we have a lot of illness, but I'm sure that the girls have the ability to win races like this. And if we keep patient and don't stress too much and keep by the plan how we want to do the season, well, then we are pretty good now.
So what about Anna and Lizzie individually? What are their plans from here? What are your ambitions for them from here in the next couple of races?
Well, I think it should be good. They understand each other pretty well. And, well, till that shape is there from them, we have to communicate how we work things out. And, yeah, I mean, it's on the end, it's the call of let the team win. And I think they take a break after Yorkshire, and then they build up again for Giro.
From the outside, you've got a team of such stars, such talent and such potential that you would imagine that it would be difficult to keep all of that in harmony and to create a good team atmosphere, yet you seem to have done that.
Yeah, it's working pretty well, but to be honest, for me, it's not that difficult. I mean, it are one by one great girls, and actually, we only select girls in the team what fit in the squad. And if they don't fit in the squad, we don't think about it to select them. And sometimes you have a mistake in it, but yeah, not so much. And I think we have a great group together, and they respect each other and everything. So it's really good.
And congratulations. You must be absolutely delighted after that. How do you feel?
Yeah, really happy, of course. It's great to win for the team, and also how we did the race. I think, it went like we planned. So that's the best, to win races like you plan.
You come in as the out-and-out favourite. Did that put any extra pressure on you, or is it all external noise?
Well, not really. Sometimes it's difficult that they know which wheel to follow, but in races like this, you know, a climb is a climb. You need to go fast. And if you go fast enough, then they cannot follow. So, yeah, for us it worked out today at the climb before the Muir. And we got with three on front. And one of them, luckily, was my teammate, Lizzie Degnan. So that was a perfect situation for us. And it could have been Lizzie just the same like it was for me now. And big compliments for my team. And I'm really happy with them.
Fairly relentless attacks on the road today, and stayed together pretty much until the end. Was that your plan, for it to come together towards the end of the final climbs and then make your attack?
Yeah, that was the plan, and it's difficult in a circuit like this to do something more. Of course, there can be a group in front, but we tried to split it a bit with the crosswinds around K60, and that worked, but it was not long enough to split it totally. So then, yeah, I think you have to wait for the climbs at the end, because in this race, the last climbs are the hardest. So, it's a bit maybe waiting the whole day for the war at the end, but it worked out now for 3 years, so I think that's the best tactic.
And I presume you're going to be a little bit biased here, but how has it been for you having a full, so far anyway, a full women's Ardennes week?
I think that's an easy question for me, because I won two now. For us this week until now is perfect, and finally, hopefully we can finish it off on Sunday.
So two out of three, how confident are you heading into Sunday?
Well, I think as a team we are looking forward also that last race because it's new for us. So new experience, it's good for the peloton. And for me personally, I'm also looking forward. But if it's going to be me or my teammate, I don't really mind. Yeah, maybe it's better now that it's a teammate from me. So we will try to do that.
Congratulations, Anna. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Orla, well, I believe there's a boys' race on as well today.
Apparently so.
So we better get a move on here. But I also spoke at the finish to members of the Drops team, a team that we follow closely, of course. Bob Varney is the man in charge. Also with Anna Christian, who rode well, and Abby Van Twisk. So here they are. We'll hear first from Anna Christian, then from Bob Varney, and then from Abby Van Twisk.
The first lap, it was like okay. It was a few crosswind sections. I got caught out once badly there. And then when it hit the mirror, that's when it did kick off. And we kind of came over the top of here. I must have been about 15th wheel maybe, and there was about 20 of us. And then about another group came across, and it must have been about 25 of us. And the next minute, all just grouped back together again. And then it did split a few times up the next climbs. And then I just got really caught out on one of the climbs, which was a bit frustrated with, really.
So you felt you had the ability to be there. It was yeah. What went wrong at that moment? Just in the wrong position, or
yeah, we kind of hit one of the longer climbs, and then it was splitting, and I was sat in a stupid position, and then yeah, and then the group of like however many 20 of them went, and then obviously sat in our group, and it was just such a lull, and I was like, oh god, and then came up the mirror last time and felt all right, so a bit annoying.
You know, on a climb like this and on a course like this, you really have the opportunity to test yourself, don't you, against the very best in the world, and it's such a tough climb. There's no hiding place there. How did you feel you compared?
Yeah, the second time definitely felt longer than the first time up it. But you see like 250 to go, and you think, oh, it's not that far, but it is far when you're carrying on over the top. But yeah, it was cool to be racing up there. The crowds up there were amazing. It was so good. But yeah, weird smell of sausages as well, but not the nicest. Yeah.
Bob, be happy?
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah, these girls are riding with the best bike riders in the world. We listened to it on the race radio in the car, and obviously we were delighted when Anna was mentioned by the race commentator. He then said that she was distanced from the very front of the group, and we were a little disappointed. But the second rider after that he mentioned that was dropped was Megan Garnier. So, you know, that kind of, within like 30 seconds on the radio, that captured everything that she'd done. You know, she's up there with the best girls in the world, and they're getting better. They're growing as a team and individually, and yeah, we've almost got a bit blasé about it, but we must have had two or three in the top 50 today, I would have thought. You know, it's yeah.
And you can see with every race little signs of improvement and growing confidence, can you?
Yeah, I can, from all of them. Yeah, I think we use the new normal, you know. The new normal, the Cipollini bus. We haven't got the Passat, we've upgraded to a Skoda, but we've got a tent this year. So, you know.
Great. Abby, how are you? Abby's been on the podcast as well.
Yeah, Abby's a friend of the podcast.
Abby, we saw your face when you saw the profile. Yeah. You put a picture on Instagram. Orla showed it to me. How did it go today?
It was savage. That's it. yeah. It was kind of controlled until you hit the mur for the first time on the small lap, and then it just went off and just split to pieces really, and then yeah, but it's a good race.
What do you learn from a race like this? I mean, you're obviously racing against the best, but on a course like this, the battle for position, you know, on the approach to the climbs, I mean, the least of it can be the climb itself. It's a fight to be in the right position going into the climb. What do you take away from a race like this?
Yeah, you can learn so much from, like, if you get near the front at the beginning of the climb, it just helps you so much, because if your legs can't, like, if you can't go with the front, you've got slippage room. And with the younger riders like us, like, when we get the strength, hopefully we'll be able to stay up there more, but it's, yeah, so much to do with positioning and everything like that, moving up in the wind, following the right wheels and stuff like that.
What's next?
Luxembourg, Tour of Luxembourg on the 27th.
Well, Orla, I mentioned a few times my tip of the day was Ashley Moulman-Passio. We saw her off the front, first time at the Mour de Huy. She was sixth at the line, and I caught up with her at the finish. Tell us what happened on the first lap. You were involved in the crash, I think, is that right?
Yeah, stupid crash, you know, the normal traffic, furniture in the road, and someone came to a full stop in front of me and I had nowhere to go, so I crashed. It wasn't a hard crash, it was just frustrating, because my car was up the road to be with Ali, who was in the breakaway, so I had to sort myself out, which took longer than it should have. It was at the worst possible moment because it was just before we turned into crosswinds and then the climbing for the final started, so I had to work really hard to get back. And then on the steep climb before we entered the final circuit, the first time up the Mir, you know, I wanted to put an attack there and see what happened, and no one came with me. I felt really strong, but then I suppose I spent too much. You know, I had just done a big effort to come back from the crash and attacked there, crossed to Ali in the front, came up the Mir in the front of the race, and yeah, I think that all added up on the last climb up the Shiraf before the final meet. I just didn't have that extra push to be with the front three. But my teammate Marie also did an incredible job. I think as a team, we raced very aggressively and we showed that, you know, we're a young team and we're challenging to just keep improving and challenging the other bigger teams, and yeah, I'm proud of the effort today.
We heard you were on the ground, and the next thing we saw you off the front on the Mur, as you said, was it one of those situations where sometimes the adrenaline is pumping harder after a crash, and perhaps you got maybe carried away a little bit once you got back to the group?
Yeah, perhaps that is what happened. As you say, you know, the adrenaline is pumping and just come from behind, and you know, instinct was to go, but yeah, for sure it cost me in the final.
I mean, is this you're a great climber, obviously. Is this a race that you pinpoint every year as one that you perhaps could add to your palmares at some point?
Yeah, always finishing. You know, I finished third in 2013. I finished fifth. I finished fourth. I finished sixth today. I just wish I could win. But yeah, I'm just going to keep trying.
Is timing so, you know, the really important factor in winning this race?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the final time up the Mir is just insanely hard, and you need every ounce of energy. And yeah, anything wasted along the route is going to cost you up the final climb. So yeah, every year I try again.
So that was Flesh Wallonne. You had a nice time at Flesh Wallonne, Orla?
It's been lovely, actually. We've been lucky with the weather. I like a bit of live race action, you know me. Music's going, the smell of hot dogs in the air. I'm in my element.
Well, let's move indoors briefly in this final part, at least in our imaginations, because the World Track Championships just finished in Hong Kong. From the women's point of view, some outstanding performances I thought I'd mention. We're going to hear from Vicky Williamson, who wasn't riding but hopes to be back at the Worlds next year. Standout performances, though, Katie Archibald in the Omnium, outstanding, especially in the points race at the end there. Incredible race. Thought she'd blown it at one point. Seemed to really went out like a rocket, then died a bit, and then came back. It was a thrilling race. Eleanor Barker as well, who got two silvers and eventually a gold medal in the points race. Another thrilling points race, that one.
Yeah, and brilliant for Eleanor Barker to get her first individual world gold. She posted a picture afterwards saying, no longer the eternal bridesmaid. So she's chuffed with that. And a brilliant display from her to win that gold as well. It took a lot of, discipline, really, to stay calm in that race. She expected to be a marked woman and ended up not being so much. She got a fairly early lap with Sarah Hammer. And then I think she expected to be able to just keep riding and winning the sprints, which she was doing, but then Hammer got another lap. So within 10 laps, Eleanor Barker knew that she had to get a lap and win the final sprint. That takes a lot of sang-froid, as the French would say.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah Hammer is so strong. Not a sprinter, but she was such a threat. And Barker, you know, it's almost, in the points race, so tactical, and timing is everything. And, you know, there's a little bit of luck comes into it as well, I think.
Yeah, but I think an awful lot of just focus as well. Because if you've ever been in a velodrome or watched when a points race really heats up towards the end, and you know that it all hinges on someone getting a lap and winning a sprint. The atmosphere into that velodrome is phenomenal, and I'm always in awe of how the riders, they must absorb some of that, they must be aware of some of that, and to be able to keep your mind, keep focused, I mean, that's what they do, obviously, they are professionals, but to be able to do that against the likes of someone like Sarah Hammer, who is so strong and so experienced, was a wonderful way to win her first individual gold, I think. So well done, Eleanor.
A few more performances worth mentioning. Chloe Dygart, 20-year-old American, who won the individual pursuit and the team pursuit with her American team. They won team pursuit at the Worlds last year as well, of course, and then won a silver medal at the Rio Olympics. A lot of changes in that American team. Andy Sparks, Sarah Hammer's husband, has actually left his position amid bullying allegations. He's been on the podcast before. I want to catch up with him on that. He was in Hong Kong because he still coaches Chloe Dygart. So that's been an unfortunate turn of events, but they obviously still riding very well and won the team pursuit gold medal again. Women's Madison, first Women's Madison in the World Championship, won by Yolene Duhr and Lottie Kopecky, the Belgian riders, very experienced riders, and won it in pretty dominant fashion. But I mentioned that we're going to hear from Vicky Williamson, who has been on this terrible journey, but I found her a very, very positive, upbeat character, very very optimistic that she's going to be able to return and get back to the level she was at, or perhaps even higher. I think watching the Rio Olympics, watching her old friend Becky James, who's been through her similar sort of setbacks and come back and won a medal in Rio, it's given her great encouragement. So here she is, Vicky Williamson.
Vicky, we're in the National Cycling Centre. It's over a year now since your crash, and to take you back to that, and people will remember seeing the pictures, it was, you don't remember much about the incident itself, do you?
No, I don't. I'm lucky actually in a way that I didn't remember anything. I just remember holding on to the fence before I was about to go up, and that's it really, in and out of consciousness as I was being wheeled into hospital, and Ellie Richardson, a rider who was guesting for GB, was with me, and at this point I think I was so high on all the painkillers I just was trying to tell her to take a picture of me, but I think I was unaware of the state of which my body was in at this point. So,
and she was aware, and others obviously had seen. So were you, did you become aware of their shock?
Not really. Like I said, I spent half the time sort of out unconscious really, so I was sort of unaware. And I think to begin with, the diagnosis was that I'd sort of cracked a few ribs, and you know, it wasn't very serious. So I think she was relaying it back to the coaches and my fiance in the UK, and it's sort of the first call started off as, you know, she's had a crash, she's okay, she's broken her ribs. And then Ollie, my fiance, was sort of like, oh, that's, you know, it's not great, but you know, at least she's okay. And then sort of the next call came and it was, okay, I think she's, you know, broken her back. And then it's sort of like when the full diagnosis came out, it was like they were all sort of on the first plane out there really. So
can you tell us you know, once in the final analysis, what the full extent of your injuries was?
Yep, so I broke my neck, back and pelvis, and also dislocated the pelvis as well. I also had a large flank wound on my right hand side, which we think was split open when I hit into the fence, and then as I slid onto the track, it was sort of like a motorbike crash and my back just tore open. Sorry for the gore detail here. So the first, yeah, the operation sort of involved pins into the bottom of my lumbar spine, a large pin into my pelvis, and then obviously the stitching up of the flank wound. And I also lost sort of all my oblique muscle. As you can imagine, it was sort of exposed to the elements and actually and died off, as I did lose 2/3 of blood. So that was another risk. But yeah, it wasn't great.
And yeah, it could have been worse. You know, in terms of, you know, future movement and so on.
Oh, definitely. Like, although, you know, everyone says, "Oh, you're so unlucky to have had a crash that bad." I mean, I've not really heard of many track cycling crashes that have been as severe as that, but I don't really see it as that. I just see it as that I'm so lucky to have not come out sort of in a wheelchair or any permanent, you know, damage. Hopefully now everything can start to repair. I mean, my left L5-S1 nerve root is still damaged down my left leg, but I mean, in the year that I've sort of had to recover, from my knee down to my ankle, I can actually feel the sensation back. So it's only my foot to go. So that's promising that that nerve has actually repaired. But yeah, I'm just lucky, really, really lucky.
Well, you say you're lucky, and you know, it's a long time now since the crash. But was that your mindset throughout? Were you? You must have had a period of feeling quite sorry for yourself as well.
I tried really hard not to. I mean, I had quite a few people in to see me. It was like I was fully booked, really. Everyone was sort of saying, you know, when can I come and see you? And I said, oh, I've got so-and-so on Tuesday, so-and-so on Wednesday, you know, it's going to have to be Friday. And so in that sense, I think that's why I sort of managed to stop myself from going into an absolute hole, really, and just digging myself deeper and deeper and just losing my mind. But yeah, like I said, I'm lucky that I was in a side ward, so I constantly had someone with me or someone visiting in that sense, so I managed to stay positive. If I would have stayed out in Holland maybe for the 4 or 5 weeks and ended up on my own, I think I really would have struggled then. But support is a massive help, and I think obviously being an athlete, although it's what got me in the hospital in the first place, that's the mindset that I've attacked the injury with, just to keep going and always looking forward, and little gains and, you know, minor things that you might not see as a big thing, sort of sitting upright and things like that, for me were massive targets. And because I always had a target, I never let myself get sort of too upset, really. But yeah, there were times when it was, you know, not great, when you're sort of laying on a bed and you can't move and you're trying to sleep with a neck brace on. It's not fun, but yeah, I'm here to tell the story. So,
well, the neck brace was a choice, wasn't it? I mean, did you not have the option of the neck brace or an operation that might not have guaranteed full movement of the neck? It seems that decisions you were making, that it was in your thoughts very early on that you wanted to, you know, that you were thinking of coming back and racing again.
Yeah, definitely. The deal with the neck brace was basically he could pin it sort of as he'd pinned everything else, but the surgeon, Mr. Sion, sort of did an impression of basically how my neck movement would be, and he said, you know, all the physio in the world won't move this because there will be physically two pins in there. And as soon as he stood there and moved his neck what seemed to me like 2 degrees, I was like, no, not even a choice. Like, there would be no way that you could ride having that little movement. And like I said, it was another operation, really. Although it meant that I wouldn't have had to have the collar, the movement was more important to me. So I battled through with that collar for 4 months. And then I think I needed to torch it by the end. I'd absolutely had enough. But fair play to anyone or anyone that has worn them or has got to wear them. Like, I do feel your pain, and they are, I can confirm, as uncomfortable as they look.
But that was a sacrifice, I suppose, a short term, although it must have felt long term at the time, sacrifice you were prepared to make again, because your long term goal seems to have been always to come back. I mean, have there been moments where you've wondered whether you really wanted to come back, given that it was, you know, racing that put you in hospital in the first place?
No, definitely not. I've always had the mindset of getting back. It's just a case of when, really. Obviously, I've sort of learnt to appreciate now that I do need time, and that rushing things is not the answer. If I wanted to do an exercise that I wasn't ready for just for the sake of a 1 week gain, that it could end up putting me back 3 weeks. So I'm just trying to be patient, or, well, I have learnt to be patient now. Before, anyone who knew me before the accident would know that I was quite impatient and sort of wanted results then and there. Sort of, I'd try something new in the gym, wouldn't be good at it, wouldn't be seeing the power on the track, and then would, you know, go to the coaches and say, I want results now, why am I not seeing the power? And they'd say, just trust in it, you know, believe, and in a few months you'll see the power. And they were always right, but I just always wanted to see results then and there. But now I think I'll come back a better athlete, because I've got that patience, I've got more drive than ever, not that I wasn't before, but obviously now I've really got the passion and stuff to get back, because I feel like there's something that I still could achieve.
What was it like watching Rio? I mean, did you watch it? I know that was the main target for you. It must have been difficult. Did you watch it, or did you sort of protect yourself?
For half of it, we were actually on holiday, because my fiancé obviously knew that I would be pretty upset watching it and stuff, so he actually booked a holiday for sort of the front end of it. But obviously, as soon as I got back, I was the first thing I did.
Where did you go to escape the Olympics?
Yeah, exactly. You can't really, because, well, we went to Portugal just for a week, which turned out to be a nightmare holiday anyway. I got food poisoning, so... But yeah, as soon as I got back, I was sort of straight on it watching anyway. It was just to sort of get out of the build-up, really, because it was that was sort of quite hard to watch, because I really felt like I was missing out then. And that was when it sort of sunk in, and that was probably the hardest part. That, you know, watching Rio was actually harder than recovering from the injury stuff as well, because I think it then sunk in exactly what I had lost, you know, the opportunity to represent country at an Olympic Games only comes around once every 4 years. It's for an athlete, you know, it's quite a big deal. So that was, yeah, it wasn't enjoyable, but at the same time, I remember watching all the racing, Paralympics and the Olympics, and just, you know, it was incredible to watch. But at the same time, you know, I was cheering and going mad. I mean, Jason Kenny's Kieran was just unbelievable. I couldn't even sit down. I sort of was getting closer and closer to the TV. It was incredible. But yeah, sort of afterwards, I was a bit low then, because it was like you say, I'd missed out, really.
So where are you now? I mean, you mentioned earlier that you're hoping to be back. You've been back on the stationary bike, I think, for a while, haven't you? Doing minimal amount. But where are you at now, and what do the next few weeks look like?
So I'm just waiting on some MRI scan results, which I'm getting next Wednesday. Just with regards to where sort of muscles have attached and the muscle, really looking now at the muscle damage. I had a CT scan a couple of weeks ago, and that was to sort of confirm bone position, and everyone's happy with bones, but now it's sort of getting really into the muscles, and particularly the oblique, like I mentioned, which actually died off as, you know, and it's sort of been cut out. So it's just to see where muscles have reattached, how much stability I've got around my SIJ joint and things like that. And it's just being passed around people, really. Obviously, I've got my surgeon's opinion, Mr. Cyan, who's actually been inside my back and operated on me. The doctors and team at British Cycling have also got an opinion from Jerry Towns over in Leeds, who's also run the scans by all the surgeons and practitioners and radiologists and stuff in the northwest. They have sort of a monthly meeting, so they're just trying to round up as much information as possible, really, to make sure that everyone knows exactly what's going on, exactly what muscles are in great condition, which ones aren't, so which ones to work on, exercises to avoid, movements to avoid, how quickly can I be loaded, is there anything I can and can't do, basically. So we're just trying to really paint that broad picture before I sort of delve in and start to ride, basically.
But you're desperate to get back on the track, aren't you? How do you think you'll feel first time back on the track?
Nervous, I think, definitely. It's just, obviously, I can't remember the crash, so that's, like I said, a blessing in disguise, but it gives me butterflies trying to think about doing it at the minute, because I just feel like it is quite a way off. But I'm sure once I'm back on, I'll be back in the routine pretty quickly, because I think it's sort of, well, it is obviously riding a bike, but I think it's something that you don't forget. I might be quite daunted again at the steepness of the velodrome. Definitely I'll sort of be flying around really quickly to make sure I don't slip to begin with, but it'll soon come back, I'm sure, after a few sessions. The nerves and the thought of sort of sliding down and crashing again, I'm sure it'll disappear quickly.
And the goal that you seem to have set your sights on in the medium term, I guess, is the Commonwealth Games next year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, I thought I was going to sort of start training in January, so I am a bit behind where I would have liked to have been, which isn't ideal. But I mean, it just depends really on how quickly I can get fit. I'll either sort of start training and I'll respond quickly, or I might take longer to respond. But I'd like to think that I can be fit by Commie Games, but at the same time, I'm not going to be too disappointed if I can't make it, because at the end of the day, the long-term goal is Tokyo. Like I mentioned earlier, if it's for the sake of just getting fit to make the Commie Games team and then breaking myself and then having Tokyo disappear from the picture, it's not worth it. At the end of the day, the aim is the Olympics, although Commonwealth Games is the big marker in between, you know, the Olympic cycles. That's what's on the radar, really.
So, I mean, you're doing this in the full awareness that it might not work, because you were just telling me that, you know, your scans show a body that shouldn't even be able to do the things that you're already doing, i.e. riding a bit on a bike and walking around.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Richard Freeman, the doctor, has been sort of open like that from day one. You know, he said there's no guarantee that you will be able to get back to the elite level. It's not like I'm being asked to just ride a bike down the road, you know, on a push bike or whatever. It's elite sport. It's representing your country and being at the top of your game. So there is no guarantee that I will get back to where I was, but for sure I want to give it a good go, because I believe that I can do it, and I believe that I know my body, and the team are willing to support me to try and get back to where I was. But yeah, I'm just up for giving it a go, really. I'm not one to give up, so to, you know, have these injuries and sort of feel sorry for myself and be like, I'm going to have to retire now, it's not something that I want to do. I've not achieved what I want to achieve. You know, I have got 15 international medals, but they're not the medals that I want. You know, I would like a world gold medal and an Olympic medal. So until I've sort of reached, you know, the likes of Becky James, Shanae's Reid, Victoria Pendleton, that is the aim. So until I've sort of reached that, I don't really feel like I've achieved what I would like to achieve. No credit to the, you know, discredit to what I have achieved, but I'm just, it's not where I want to be yet. So
because are there people, I mean maybe family, friends who do tell you that you're crazy to be trying to become an international athlete again after what you've been through?
Definitely. I mean, I had mixed opinions from my parents and stuff. You know, they sort of know the ins and outs, and they've said to me, you know, please just be careful. But I know I'm in the best hands here at British Cycling, and they are going to take things slow and steady and not rush me, really, because like I said, I'm not in a rush to get ready for a competition. I just need to take it slow and see how I go on and see how I respond to training. But the bottom line is, until I start, no one's going to know how I'm going to respond. So
that was the quite inspiring Vicky Williamson, and we wish her the best of luck as she continues her journey back to full health and fitness. Hopefully she'll be back racing again at some point soon, and maybe competing in the World Championships next year. Orla, we're now in a car speeding towards the English Channel and home. But it's been a good day at Flesh Wallonne. We have, since we last spoke to you, found out that Corinne Rivera is still in the leader's jersey of the Women's World Tour. She leads those standings. But she's sticking to her plan, as she told us earlier, to not ride Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Quite odd. I wonder if there'll be a rethink even in the next couple of days.
Yeah, it does sound very odd, and maybe that was an early call on her part, hoping that she'd be able to stick to her plan. When Elisa Longo Borghini rode into the World Tour leader's jersey, she quite quickly had to change her plans to display it at the World Tour races, the following World Tour race. So, yeah, it would be unusual if she didn't, really.
An ASO-organised event, obviously Liège-Bastogne-Liège. If they care about their Women's World Tour events, then they might not be very happy that the leader isn't riding. But I'm not sure how much they do care about their women's events. I mean, you know, Flesh Wallonne has been running as a men's and women's event for a number of years now. I think it was 1998 it was resurrected, the women's Flesh Wallonne.
I think this is the ninth year of the women's Flesh Wallonne. And I was surprised. It was a brilliant race, actually, in terms of the crowds that were there, the action that we got to follow. But, you know, I don't want to be too negative, but there is a place to say that I find it disappointing that we couldn't follow the race live, even as we were there. So the start of the race was shown live on a big screen, and then about 20 minutes after the race had started, coverage stopped. So for anyone who turned out this morning to watch the start of the race, they had no way of following it from the finish line. So they all had to, they hung around, but you weren't able to watch it. And I find that really disappointing, and it also begs the question, what the point is really in a breakaway in women's racing, because the point of it obviously in men's racing is that you get TV coverage, you get attention drawn to your sponsor, even if you've got no chance of winning the race. In a women's race, it really does seem to be suicidal, because you get absolutely zero attention other than a little bit of a mention on Twitter. So there's still a long way to go with women's racing, but the race itself was fantastic to watch.
And we watched the boys race afterwards, and it was very formulaic, and dare I say it,
well, quite predictable and yeah, maybe even a little bit boring as it has been in recent years, because it just all comes down to the final 200 metres, really. The women's race, by all accounts, from what we know, was pretty exciting, albeit quite a familiar winner as well. Orla, I hate to correct you, but actually it was 98 that Flesh Alone for Women was first held, so 19 editions as of the start of this one, so 20 now.
My apologies, but I would pull you up on that because I don't think you would hate to correct me in the slightest.
Got me. What a comeback. Anyway, as I say, we're in the car, we're heading home. Next month's podcast, Femina, will be a little bit different again. We're doing an event with Lizzie Dignan in Leeds, at Watterson's in Leeds. And on Tuesday, the 25th of April, that'll be just as this podcast is coming out. But hopefully there'll be a good crowd there, and we'll be recording it and putting it out next month as our special podcast Femina for May.
Ooh, yep. I don't know.
Anyway, that's all for this month. Thank you very much, Orla.
Thank you very much, Richard.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
A little addendum to this month's cycling podcast Femina, because the first women's Liège-Bastogne-Liège was held, as we mentioned there, 4 days after we returned from Flesh Wallonne. Though like Flesh Wallonne, it was very difficult indeed to follow if you weren't there, with no TV coverage, disappointingly. Corinne Rivera teased us all by tweeting pictures of her wrecking the course a couple of days ago, but then stuck to her word and gave it a miss. The race itself mirrored the two previous Women's World Tour races, Amstel Gold Race and Flesh Wallonne. Anna van der Breggen won alone again. Yet again, her teammate Lizzie Dignan was second, and again for the third race in a row, Kasia Nevedoma of Marion Vos's WM3 Pro Cycling Team was third. Annemiek van Vleuten took over the lead in the Women's World Tour. The Women's World Tour takes a short break now before the Tour of Chongming Island from the 5th to the 7th of May, and then a Tour of California from the 11th to the 14th of May. Finally, thanks very much indeed once again to our sponsors, Rafa and Science and Sport. And a big thanks to Tom Wally for producing this month's episode.